You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I've got the double-header Dream Team edition of Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. Gentlemen, I won't say that I'm not still sort of slightly under the weather mentally after what happened yesterday, and but well done on both to both of you for predicting it. But I don't think either of you could have predicted the margin of victory for Donald J. Trump. Viv, it was quite startling, wasn't it?
Yes, and it was startling for one major reason, and that was the media did not do their job. If you think about it, we were getting things from what was called the gold standard of pollsters, saying that Harris is going to win, I think, in Ohio, right? And she ended up losing by the margin of error was like 17%. You know what I mean? And this was, if you look at back, like a story that was being published on like the New York Times, as you know, the pollsters say there's a massive run up in the before the election. The media did not do their job. It should not have been a surprise how well Trump did if the media had done their job. And that's the only thing that I'm really concerned about. It's the fact that we have somehow entered a period where, due to partisanship, we don't know what the objective truth of the world is. And that is the really bad thing that we're experiencing at the moment.
Do you think then the media was trying to influence people by putting out these projections of a tight race, Viv? Mm. And then, David, I'll come to you in a second.
Mm. I mean, it's obviously they did, because you look at the Republican guys, they were always saying Trump was going to win by a ton. Look at the Democrats guys, and often by too much, more than he ended up winning by. And you look at the Democrats, they were saying, you would probably put the New York Times and CNN and those guys in the Democrat side, they would say, no, Kamala Harris is doing much better than that. It's a very clear thing. There's no independent, you know, like, you know, institution like the BBC in the US. You know, even though the BBC might be accused of being more left-wing than right-wing in the UK, that is considered to be an objective source of truth. Right now in the US, you could not find a single big newspaper that's an objective source of truth. And I don't know if you read the Jeff Bezos, you know, op-ed about why he didn't endorse Kamala Harris. And it comes down to the fact that the U.S. News media is now less trusted than the U.S. Congress. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, like, you know, like, I think it's low teens of trust in the news media. It's because depending on the newspaper you read, you're going to live in an entirely different world. And yes, they get some things right, but when it comes down to anything that's contentious, they're going to default to a partisan kind of outlook, which is, you know, there must be a market for an independent media source in the world. I don't know why that doesn't exist at the moment.
Well, it's almost like a ratings agency style media outlet, which just disseminates all the information and doesn't have any, there's no partisan leaning. David, you're obviously disappointed. I've never asked Viv what his leanings were, but I know yours. You know what really annoys me is that, having looked at it, and I should have seen it before, but I was too blinded by the fact that I wanted Harris to win, campaign was so weak and her campaign team missed so many own goals, especially on the economy. I could have written her script for the economy and how she should have approached it. They were so flimsy compared to the Trump thing, which was when he got on stage, he'll do his normal thing and then he'll say, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? That resonates with people, no matter whether they're simple or sophisticated.
I think the one thing that we missed was just how important inflation was on the wallets of most people, even if they were wealthier than they were a few years ago. No one picked up what this meant. And also, no one picked up how the population were sick and tired of the status quo, you know, nothing happening. And that goes back to the whole Biden presidency. And I think she couldn't distance herself quick enough. You know, in other words, she never had enough time to actually distance herself from Biden and what he stood for. But I think, you know, going back to your point and to Viv's point, is that the media missed the feelings of the population, the mood of the population. And that's, you know, that's coming out now. I mean, the fact that she didn't win the women's vote, you know, despite the fact that she had this abortion on her side, or the anti-abortion, attacking anti-abortion. She didn't win that. She lost the Latino vote. She lost the African-American vote, you know, in droves. And the traditional base of the Democrats also left her. So, and the other one was, you know, normally the Republicans would win the rural areas or the outline. No, they won, you know, in the cities. There was even in New York and in California and places like that. So she was abandoned. I mean, or let me put it another way. The Democratic Party was abandoned. People just left it in droves. And, you know, as we go now and look at it, we say we were so far away from it, you know, and I think the journalists were angry. They were bitter. I like this Atlanta. I read the Atlantic.
Yes.
And even now they're coming, you know, the man elected president last night is a depraved and brazen pathological liar, a shameless con man, a sociopath criminal. You know, they carry on like that. I'm saying, listen, you've lost.
Yes, yeah.
Take a few steps back, get rid of your anger and understand where you are and what needs to be done to change it if you don't want this man. So, when I saw the results, I could not believe it. You know, I'm still kind of trying to grasp it and hook onto it.
These tired old arguments about him being this and that, I mean, they are exactly that. He keeps on going on and on, and people, it just washes over people now. It doesn't matter what he says. I mean, J.D. Vance said, he said that Harris was trash. How can you say that? How can you say that as someone that's going to be in the White House? This is a woman who's worked her way up from a normal upbringing to being a prosecutor in San Francisco and then vice president. Why would he say that she is trash? But people are used to that now. So it doesn't matter. Yeah. So the Atlantic can say whatever it likes. And people can say what they like as well. The fact is that there was a landslide. What really gets me is the smugness of Trump and that freaky family of his. No, I'm not being nasty. I mean, I'm getting as bad as Vance now. But but it is very strange that that picture that I sent you both earlier today, it's a family photograph, but Elon Musk is in there holding a child and no Melania Trump in there. I mean, Viv, you thought that the woman standing, the tall blonde woman standing to the left of Elon Musk was Melania Trump. But no, Melania Trump, I think, has said to her husband, listen, I'm supposed to do so many minutes a day, whatever, over a month. And that's why I signed the agreement to stop me from talking about our marriage. And this photograph does not fall within those minutes. I don't know, but Viv, didn't you find it sort of cult like that picture?
Yeah, look, I mean, the thing is that it's definitely a victory of personality. The reason I would say that is because if you look at it, Trump won all the swing states, right?
Yeah.
But I think he only managed to flip a single Senate seat in those swing states. That means that the people that were also running as Republicans in those swing states, like Nevada, he won by a lot. But I think all the congressional seats and currently the Senate seat, it's quite close, but it looks like the Senate seat as well is going to go Democrat. Okay. So it wasn't a case of Trump took on the Republican Party and rolled the Republican Party and people are voting for Trump because he's the Republican candidate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
People are voting Republican because Trump is the candidate. Do you grasp the difference here? So it is a case of, it's not a Republican victory, it's a Trump victory. Because he's basically overshadowed the Republican Party to such an extent that, yes, like in, for instance, Texas, he won by more than Ted Cruz won by, right? Even though they are, you know, both Republicans or whatever. People were splitting the vote. I think in North Carolina, people voted for the Democratic governor and voted for Trump as the presidential candidate. So this is a case. This is a cult of personality. I don't think, luckily, that any of his children have the same personality or, you know, abilities to run this or do something like this, except for his daughter. Ivanka Trump, Ivana Trump, I'm not sure the name is, one of the two. Anyway, I think the daughter might have the ability. The sons don't seem to have that. I don't know what the youngest son is. I'm not going to talk about him because he's a teenager, so it's not obviously right to talk
Baron,
about him.
The really tall one with the Trump, with the Donald mouth. Yeah, he's got the same mouth as his father.
He's got the mother's looks, that's fine, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a child. You can't talk about children. So, I mean, even though I think he's 18 or something, but it's not, you can't talk about that. But I think Ivanka,
Ivanka, yes.
Because the mother's name is Ivana, so it's very confusing. Anyway, I think she's the only one that seems to have the ability, but she kind of diverses that through her husband, Jared Kushner, who's the one that took a big step there. But I want to talk about a couple of things here, and I don't know if you guys realize this, right? If you look at J.D. Vance, okay, who he is, okay? And it's a bit conspiratorial, just follow me for a second, but this is something that I talked about before, and I think I mentioned it to you guys as well. Okay, given Trump's age and his weight, I saw somebody put a study out there that the chance of somebody like that, we had to do like an actuarial thing, of surviving 4 years is something like 60-something%. Mm. So there's about a one-third chance something happens to him in the next 4 years, given his age and given his BMI. You understand? So that means J.D. Vance has about a 1 in 3 chance of being the president of the United States in the next 4 years.
Well, this is what I saw, Viv, today. Sorry to interrupt you. It said that the one person who clearly dislikes the Republican Party under the stewardship of Trump. He said, the only reason I really want Trump to live, and this is not me saying this, this is what I read, the only reason I want Trump to live for the next 4 years is so that J.D. Vance does not come into power because he is far more dangerous than Trump is. Is that the sort of sentiment you're trying to get across?
Yeah, but it goes in further than this, right? Because, Peter Thiel, right, is the man that created J.D. Vance. And I say that, objectively. Peter Thiel is the guy that basically mentored Vance when he was in Silicon Valley, kind of gave him his career, and then basically gave him his Senate seat. Because he basically, with a guy called, he sponsored two people, Blake Masters and J.D. Vance, to get into Senate, to the Senate. And Vance was the one that got through, and Blake Masters didn't. So J.D. Vance holds his entire career, including his political career, to Peter Thiel. Okay? I don't know if you've seen, Palantir share price. Okay?
Palantir, yeah.
I've seen that thing go up like a rocket ship. Okay. Yeah. That's Peter Thiel. And if something happens to Trump, Peter Thiel is going to basically have a really strong link with Vance. And Peter Thiel's Palantir does a lot of business with government. It's almost like a secret CIA kind of company. And especially if you look at what's happening right now with, Trump talking about the intelligence system. He's going to replace the CIA and the FBI basically with Palantir. Exactly. Okay, so Peter Thiel, and if you think, okay, this is conspiratorial. Let me give you an example as to Peter Thiel, right? Oh. They got a 401k. It's an investment thing that you use to invest in the US, right?
Yeah.
What do you think the limits of the 401k are? It's about $20,000. Okay, it used to be, it's $60,000. Okay, it's this small little kind of investment thing you put in for investing money just long term.
Yeah.
Okay, so you put in $6,000 in each time, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think Peter Thiel's IRA is worth?
Go on.
Mm-hmm. So $6,000 limit per year you can put in. What do you think this thing is worth?
Oh, gosh, Viv, you're the stats man. You must tell us.
No, take a wild guess. I give you an investment platform, and you're the world's best investor. And I say to you, put $6,000 a year away, and after a couple of decades, what would be the value of this investment that you put away?
That's a monstrous amount of money. David, you've got to help me here.
No, I don't know. I can't, compound fast enough.
No.
How many years? Yeah.
If I came and gave you $6,000, right?
About $72,000 a year. Okay.
No. $6,000 a year.
Oh, 6,000 a year and a decade is 60,000. It's nothing. So, even compounded, it's, maybe 3, 4, 5 times up. So,
more $5 billion.
Yeah.
What?
$5 billion.
These are real numbers, Viv.
These are real numbers. Peter Thiel's Roth IRA is worth plus $5 million back in 2019. It's probably almost double that right now.
Yeah.
Okay. This man plans in advance. He's basically took the shares in the companies he had basically invested in, all these kind of like, you know, unlisted companies, and he was buying them at really cheap prices. And he was putting his, like I don't know if it's Facebook, but he's putting all these like investments into this thing. And he has a Roth IRA, which in a couple of years' time, he's going to retire and get it tax-free, because that's how the Roth IRA works, the tax-free savings account. Okay?
Yeah, the 401k, what's it, 401?
Okay, $5 billion, right? This is what this man did. He once was insulted by a newspaper who published the fact that he was gay. Okay, this is a true thing, right? And what happened was he decided to take revenge. He concocted this huge multi-year revenge plot that involved Hulk Hogan, the wrestler. I'm not joking. Okay, and he bankrupted Gawker. He bankrupted the company. And he put, I think he basically drove the man that was the journalist he hated to like attempt suicide or something. It is really like, this man plans long term. So when I say to you that he put in J.D. Vance as a guy that said it a few years ago, 2-3 years of planning is nothing to this man. Okay?
That explains a lot about J.D.'s stance towards life and to politics and how he switched. I mean, the switch from saying Trump is America's Hitler to being his little lapdog. I mean, it's extraordinary. And that's what's so disturbing, that if he does get into power, what is he capable of? If he's capable of doing the switch, doing a full 180 on Trump, what can he do if he's in power? This is very, very disturbing.
Also, he's younger. Is significantly smarter. J.D. Vance is significantly smarter. I think you'd have to go back to Obama and Clinton to see comparable people with brain power in there. He may even be above that in terms of like his like raw like, you know, ability. If you look at him like on the interview shows he did, he was handling, you know, hostile interviews so easily. It's really clever. It's really clever. Mm. But like I said, this is like Peter Thiel. Okay, this is a conspiratorial, I know, but Peter Thiel and what he did with J.D. Vance, looking at his history, this is a man that it was like a chess champion.
He plans way in the past.
Yeah. And by the way, he's also the brilliant.
Is Thiel, I mean, is he that power mad, is that he wants to control these puppets or people through them? You know, is his aim to, you know, to control the American economy? I'm trying to go further. Why would one do this? You know, I mean, he's an enormously wealthy man in his own right. He's behind very, very successful Silicon Valley companies. You know, what's the driving force of Peter Thiel? You know, why would he want to be in that kind of position?
I don't know. Look, I mean, Peter Thiel is one of the weirder guys. By the way, he's South African as well, huh?
Oh, with the name Thiel, of course, yes. Thiel, I think, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So he's born in Germany, but his family lived in South Africa.
Like Musk.
No, this is weird. If you look at the PayPal mafia, and Thiel was part of the PayPal mafia, okay, again, conspiratorial, I'm going to admit that. But what happened was, as apartheid was ending, a lot of people sent their money overseas, you know, with their young kids. And these young kids go to the U.S., and what are they? They're young people, they're outside the culture, and they have this money that was given to them by their family. Where do they congregate to? Silicon Valley, because that's the opportunity. That's like the crypto of the past, except it's real. And a lot of the money that you see like floating around Silicon Valley was effectively apartheid exile money. And so Peter Thiel, of course, David Sachs was also, like, if you look, David Sachs is also South African, big shot, you know, is the All In podcast, also a billionaire, Elon Musk, Rolf Botha.
Musk, and they also had the PayPal connection, right?
They're all PayPal guys, yeah. So yeah, these guys all came from here, and so I don't know whether or not it's just a megalomania.
Interesting. I'm looking up now.
Yeah. He was also in Namibia. He lived in South Africa.
He lived in South Africa and Namibia. South Africa. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And changed elementary schools 7 times. He attended a school in Swakopmund that required students to wear uniforms and utilized corporal punishment, such as striking students' hands with a ruler. Okay, I had that as well, but I didn't become a multi-billionaire. He said this experience instilled a distaste for uniformity and regimentation and later reflected in his support for individualism. Ah, okay, this is fascinating.
He can't become president. He can't become president
because he was born in Germany.
Born there.
Yeah. And you look at Musk, by the way, but I mean, if you're looking at, you know, again, why are they doing this? And this is, again, conspiratorial, okay? But please follow me. Okay, I'm going really tinfoil hat.
You're going head down on this one, Viv.
Right, I agree, head down. Okay. what is the one thing that Peter Thiel and Elon Musk and everybody else seems to believe in Silicon Valley at the moment? It's AI.
Yeah.
Right. We are entering maybe the next 5 to 10 years where AI is going to disrupt everything. Okay, and if you basically, or in the case of Elon Musk, it's space travel, or in the case of Elon Musk, it is driverless vehicles. Okay, and if you basically are going to have, and you know, also Elon Musk is in his 50s, he has maybe 10 to 15 years in his mind of productive life left. If he's able to control or have strong influence about things like the EPA, about the SEC, about, you know, all these little regulatory bodies, which, by the way, I don't think Trump cares about at all. I don't think Trump would give a damn about whether or not you changed the water regulations at SpaceX or not. But that's a big deal to Elon Musk. I don't think he could care about whether or not, you know, where chips come from or not. But it matters to Peter Thiel. I think these guys saw a point in history in which we are going to enter a period of extra innovation, extra, you know, uncertainty. And that if you basically controlled not just the company, but also the levers of government around it, you could come out of this particular event with, you know, spectacular power and money. And I think that is the reasoning that you're seeing the Silicon Valley guys enter this thing at the moment. There's a movement in Silicon Valley called EAC, Effective Accelerationism, that wants to get technology moving as fast as possible. Also, maybe it has to do with the fact that people are getting older and they're thinking mortality comes around. And before you see, I'm going with this tutorial, have you ever heard of a blood boy?
No.
What do you do at that?
I know exactly what he does at night.
No. Okay. I'm not joking about this. Right? This is how crazy Peter Thiel is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Peter Thiel, okay, ejects himself with the blood of young people. A little
you
longer.
You're kidding, no. No, now you're making me worried now. Seriously.
Google it, okay? You're seeing people like this, like they're getting older, they're getting to a point at which they are worrying about mortality and whatnot, and they see a future in which they do medical science, whatever. It could be that. It could be just the fact they want money and power. But these guys have spotted a point in history in which technology is changing, the world is changing, and if you can get yourself really strong influence in the U.S. government, okay, at this point in time, you basically could control the most powerful technology in the world as it's created. And that, I think, is what really is pushing these guys at the moment.
You see what I've done? You see,
let's
just stop this now. I really wish I hadn't mentioned J.D. Vance now.
I'm not joking. Everything I've said, you could Google and look up. And sounds crazy.
Okay. Right. Calm down, everybody.
This is all beyond Trump, that I can assure you.
No, this is beyond Trump. Trump is not the person driving this. Trump would not have an understanding as to why. They'll come to him and ask him to do things, and he'll be concerned about Israel, Gaza. He'll be concerned about Ukraine. He won't understand why this particular regulation about this particular kind of nuclear power plant or this particular regulation about, you know, chips and so on matter. But Musk and Thiel and those guys will know that these small changes will give them a huge amount of power. And okay. That is what is going to happen in the next couple of years. And mark my words, Tesla, Palantir are going to benefit from the Trump presidency like you would not believe.
Talking about benefiting from the Trump presidency, gentlemen, last night around about this time, I looked at my screen and I saw Tesla was up 15.6% or something like that. David, over to you on this one. I know you're not a fan of Musk, nor am I, but everyone seems to think that the reason Musk is in the family photo, for goodness sake, holding a child, is that he's going to be given benefits galore, whether it be SpaceX, whether it be electric vehicles. I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
You know, what does he want it for? What's a driving force? You know, why does he want it? Does he require that much attention? You know, what is it that he wants to do? You know, why does he want to cozy up to Trump and be part of this inner circle to run America? I mean, you know, I can't understand it. He's running a business. He's got enough on his plate. Make those cars better. Sell them. He's got SpaceX, etc. Why involve yourself in politics? That worries the hell out of me.
Because he's a deeply insecure person and needs constant affirmation. It's very simple. It's a classic male overcompensation.
I suppose this is all part of this inner core that Trump's going to put together, which is, I think, incredibly worrying about, you know, the people that he's actually going to choose to run government and what their motivation is. And listening to Viv, and I, for not a second, am I going to, contradict him or disagree with him. Yeah. But what concerns me is that where you have these characters in the background, you know, for me, government is government. They're the people who must make sure that the infrastructure's there so that businesses can, grow, or that if you come in and build a factory, that there's going to be electricity there, water there, you're in the right area, labor, etc. They civil servants, or they those kind of people that are there, who aren't ambitious in terms of, not capitalistically ambitious. They don't want to make huge amounts of money. They want to serve their country. You know, you get them in the military, you get them in all over. People who become mayors, the people who become governors, and so on. But this sounds completely different. I mean, this just sounds absolutely awful that you want to get into the inner core just so you can increase your power base.
It's happened. It's all settling down a little bit, and we'll see what unfolds over the next 3 months, 6 months, 4 years.
The good news, though.
What's the good news?
Really good. Is that the markets are just screaming higher.
Yeah.
And that's kind of given me some kind of relief. I must. It's kind of eased the pain, you know. So from that point of view,
we have to talk about a little bit about the JSE companies. Anglo Gold Ashanti came out with an update, and the share price doing well after the resources stocks getting absolutely slaughtered yesterday. There's been a bit of a bounce back today. But David Trueworth, I don't know if you had a chance to see it. They always come out late with their updates and their results. But I think the growth in revenue of 2.8% year on year really disappointed, because if inflation is whatever it is, 4%, and your revenue is only up 2.8%, in, something's going wrong there.
Well, the economy is going wrong. You know, that's which they point out. They say, despite all the optimism in the background about the government of national unity, it hasn't translated into anything materialistic. You know, material for them to build a business on. You know, so consumer demand is still very low in the UK. The same kind of thing is happening with their investment, their office, you know, which sells shoes. So I think it's just a reflection of, hey, nothing's happening. You know, we're all parting, and we all think things are going to be better, but nothing's really there for us to get a grip of. And I think that's going to come through as well in a lot of results. You know, I don't think it's whatever's happened is translated into optimism is there and people feel better, but I don't think it's translated into money being spent on anything in any form. And that, you know, we can talk about electricity improving and so on, but I think read that. That's why I'm saying to you, Lindsay, always read results. You know, you get a true reflection of what's happening on the ground.
Viv, do you ever think, when you talk about so expansively and enthusiastically, and you kept on saying that it could be conspiratorial, but obviously there's some truth to it. Do you ever think that when you look at these characters, the Musks and the Teals and the Bezoses of this world, do you often say, do you know what, I'm going to focus completely on America and forget about South Africa, apart from paying it some cursory interest for clients that want to be in it? Do you think that South Africa is being shunted aside and you have to focus on where the action is at, as they say?
I don't think South Africa will be shunted aside for a couple of reasons. Firstly, we're a member of BRICS, right? And I think, this is a little out of left field, but look at us on a map, okay? If you are entering a period of global instability, you definitely want to be friendly with the country at the bottom of Africa.
Just because you can keep running.
Yeah, because you basically are able to cut off, you know, the Atlantic and the Indian Oceans, if you think about it.
Now, let me tell you something, Viv. Lindsay, yeah. there was a movie, which was one of these horror movies, probably in the 50s and 60s, which was that. There was a nuclear bomb left, and the fallout started to come. And the only safe place was down in Cape Town. And everybody fled down to the west, you know, down to the Southern Cape. Viv, they've already made the movie of your views.
Mm. Yeah, I think that in BRICS, as well as the South African geographic position, especially if something happens in the Middle East that closes the Suez Canal, If you're to ship stuff from China to Europe or back and forth,
you've got to go around the Cape. Mm.
You've got to go around the Cape. So it's an important thing. So I think South Africa is important from that point of view. But I do think if you're looking at it internationally, I think you are probably, this is my view, a global geopolitical view from an amateur, but I think we're going to see the Russia situation shut down very quickly, okay? Because I think Trump, people are right about this, is going to give Russia what it wants for the deal is going to be Russia gets what it wants in the Ukraine, but Russia kind of stays neutral or moves away from China. Okay, and I think that's the deal that he's going to do there.
What about Zelensky? I mean, you haven't mentioned the word Zelensky. Do you honestly think that the Ukrainian people are going to say, you illegally invaded our country and you've illegally occupied and taken these particular territories, you can have them and we'll go quietly? I mean, it's an affront to their sovereignty.
But, I mean, unfortunately, you know, affront doesn't match with weaponry. And without the U.S. weaponry, Europe, unfortunately, for, you know, maybe they're starting up right now, but it's too late for them to do anything really effective against Russia. So unless they're going to step up and do that, you know, it's going to be a case of Trump coming in, saying, you know, Russia, you make a deal with Russia. It may not even have to be the whole of Ukraine. It could just be, give back some of the territory you've taken. But I think the main deal he's going to make is going to be around sanctions. He's going to say, we'll put you back into the financial system. We'll put you back into the, you'll be able to sell your oil again. The sanctions get reduced. It may be a case that he has to give back parts of Ukraine, you know, to make it work, you know, to show that, you know, he's giving up part of the Ukraine, etc. And that Ukraine doesn't become part of NATO. I think that's all going to be to basically split China and Russia up, okay? And I think that is the geopolitical thing that's going to happen. I do also think that, you know, the Russia-Iran connection is probably going to also be cut as well as part of that deal. Because when Russia and Iran are doing a lot of stuff together, the Iranian bombs or drones are being used in Russia to the Shahid drones in Russia. I think that's also going to be cut up. He's going to give Russia the deal. Neutral on our side, we'll get you back into the system, but you have to cut off or basically be more cold towards China and towards Iran. And I think that's a deal they might take.
Well, it'd be very interesting if that happens, Viv, because apparently, according to the New York Times, Elon Musk has been chatting quite frequently with our pal Vlad the Destroyer, Vladimir Putin, who's in Sochi at the moment at some investment conference. He said to, according to the New York Times, but again, it could be a lot of fake news, he said, don't give Taiwan Starlink, and this was during one of their typhoons, because I don't want President Xi to be annoyed about it, and I've got this alliance with him, so if you could please refrain from initiating Starlink in Taiwan. So that's another very disturbing thing. You've got Musk in the White House, potentially, or having a desk in the White House, and him talking to Putin. I don't understand it.
So, Musk will not have a desk. Musk cannot have an official position in the White House because even the U.S. has things about conflicts of interest.
Yeah.
He'll be much more of an advisor. So,
figurative term, yeah. But I know what you mean. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so he'll be much more like on the thing. So there'll be a degree of separation here. Because an important thing, people like the New York Times mentioned the fact that if Musk wanted to, he could get a position in the White House and then sell his assets in Tesla and SpaceX or whatever, tax-free. Because that's been the deal you've done in the past.
Yeah. He can't. You know what? Even after tax, even if he spent $1 billion a day, he's not going to run out of money. That's insane.
But if you were concerned about money, you would not do what Elon Musk is doing. Because you have to be broken as a person to get that rich. That's my belief. If you have $1 billion, if you have $100 million, right, and you're working for a living, you're broken as a person. You have to find something better to do in life. But anyway, so that is that deal, right? So I think that is going to be a real shakeup for the next, say, 6 months or so in Ukraine, Russia. I think that's also, the Chinese are also very scared about this because the stimulus packages the Chinese were doing were on the idea that, you know, that Trump wasn't going to win. But if Trump was going to win, those stimulus packages are going to be need to be much, much larger because they're going to have a huge backlash. And here's speaking of the UK, I saw a study that showed that if Trump's tariff packages come into play, the effect on the UK economy will be worse than Brexit. So Keir Starmer is already, you know, have to send messages across to Trump.
He was the first call, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
He was behind old Cromwell. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
And you see BW share price?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
tanked on the day of the Trump announcement. It was down like, I think, you know, 5% or something on the day. And I think the European car makers, European countries, because Trump is going to come in with this China thing up front, big stick in hand, are going to try and make extra carefully, you know, it is true. He's right about one thing. People think he's crazy, and therefore they are afraid of him, and they will be much more, like, you know, amenable to whatever he says than a normal person. And the European countries are not going to be as tough against him as you think they would be, considering they're, like, you know, ideological things, because of these tariffs that he's kind of wielding at his hands.
On that VW note, Viv, they're closing down two factories, which is the first time in their history. I mean, I don't know how old VW is, but they're closing down two factories.
You don't want to know how old VW is.
It's a very big deal in Germany. I mean, Germany's in turmoil politically today because of the sacking of the finance minister and the coalition breaking up, and maybe a snap election next month, or as the latest it will be is March. But Germany's in turmoil under Scholz. And anyway, do you know what? Viv in particular is on fire tonight and has exhausted me, and I think David as well is going to have to go for a lie down at the end of this. So let's have a look at some prices here. Dollar rand 17.31. That's a 1.4% move, stronger for the rand. British pound against the rand, 22.50. Euro rand is 18.72. Euro dollar is 108.15, which is a euro that has gained 0.6% after yesterday's post-election currency movements. British pound, nearly 130. I'm going to call it 130. Gold price, having had a horrible day yesterday, is just below 2,700, which is up nearly $30 on the day. Platinum has recovered by 1.25% to 9.98. And palladium has barely changed at 10.37. The all-important oil price, which hasn't really done much with Trump, it's down 0.2% for Brent crude, $74.43, and West Texas crude, $71.17, which is down 0.7%. Natural gas down 2.75%. Copper, having been down 4% yesterday, up 4% today. What else? Not much. S&P 500. Can you believe it? Do you know, during the financial crisis, 2007-2008, the S&P went to 666, 666. It's now nearly 6,000. 5,988 for the December futures on the S&P. What an astonishing recovery. It just shows you just got to buy the dips constantly on these things. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield has recovered its sanity a little bit, but with the Trump expansionary talk, the bond yields rose yesterday, fear of inflation. Now 4.36%. The South African 10-year bond yield, 9.40%. And Bitcoin, also a Trump factor there. I think this is record high, 75,700 and change. Yeah, something like that. It could be. David, please give us the... Oh, no, let me give you some shares on the JSE. After all, this is a mainly South African podcast. I have got, on the upside, Sappi up 9%. Look at that. Implats bouncing back after yesterday's mauling. 5.8% higher. AngloGold Ashanti, after its numbers, 5.3% to the good. And Thungela, 4.25% higher. Truworths, we spoke about that. 6.1% weaker. TFG, another retailer.
More retailers, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. Pushing. Yeah, TFG down 3.5%. Mr. Price following suit, down 2.8%. Adcock Ingram down 2.6%. And Vodacom down 2.1%. David, any others that you picked up? Or was
that just got a Sappi story. They published their quarterly report. So for the fourth quarter, there was a vast improvement. But they also published their annual results, which were absolutely awful. But the market responded to a turnaround in the fourth quarter, and that's why they're up. You know, this is notoriously difficult to read, the paper industry. It's from one quarter to the other. I think the only thing that disturbed me in the results is that their debt is on climbing once more. It might be seasonal, but anyway, it's a company I just watch out of interest, never invest in it. But the other one is that, you know, you mentioned Mr. Price, Fushini and Truworth. I think both of those came down on the back of what Truworth showed, you know, that things aren't really picking up. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's one day up, one day down for platinum and the miners. So,
yeah, all over the place. David, I'll stay with you because I want you to give us the closing JSE indices and the value traded, please.
Value traded, again, as you know, just before we got on there, the values traded were around about 12 billion. But after the auction, it's up to $21 billion. Just shows you all the, you know, the balancing that takes place in that closing auction. So $21 billion. Now Spurs, First Rand, Anglo Gold Process, the big traders. Just on the indices, all share up 0.78%. That's a bit of a recovery, driven up by a big turnaround in the mining counters. Resource index up over 3%, with gold and platinum shares leading the way up. Banks, yeah, the rest of the market pretty flat. Banks, banks up almost 1%. But then with the rand improving, you had AB InBev, British American Tobacco, NASPERS, all of those companies coming under a bit of pressure on translation. And so your industrial index was down about 0.5%, mainly on the back of those companies. But overall, a big improvement from the trouble we had yesterday. Even some of the property stocks doing pretty well.
Viv, you and David just talk for 1 minute. I've quickly got to get a book which I want to read a couple of pages from for you. So just stay there and you'll hear my chair squeaking. So you have a quick chat now. Hold on. Take me headphones off. No, you two carry on. Seriously, I'm going to read this because, Viv, this is for you. Hold on.
Okay, cool.
Go on, talk away.
Yeah. David, when you mentioned for this, the Volkswagen, how old it was, I thought, you know, he was making a joke about the Nazis. You know, but because they did start Volkswagen back in the day, didn't they?
Oh, no, there, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what happened? I think the world moved far from that. I mean, even if you look at Boss, you know, Boss in the old
days, Hugo Boss,
made, yeah. Made the uniforms, yeah. So.
Yeah, but. I think they may be but I think Volkswagen was literally started by the Nazis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was the people's wagon, you know, yeah. The people's car. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, there were a lot of motor vehicles.
I think we've all had a Beetle,
you know,
haven't we?
For a long period, I must tell you something. Yeah. After the war, the Jewish population, a lot of Jews would not drive Mercedes or BMWs. Hmm. Some people to their dying day, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was because of the association. They wouldn't touch German cars for a long time, you know, well into the 70s and 80s even.
Is it? Okay.
Okay. Now, Viv, off to your Peter Thiel. It wasn't a rant, but you were very enthusiastic about it. And David actually prompted this by saying, what do you do at night, Viv? You said that, David, didn't you?
I did say that.
Yes, you did say that. Okay. Now, what I want you to do, Viv, I'm sure David will echo my sentiments, is take your young child and read her him or... Is it a boy or a girl? I've forgotten.
My daughter.
Okay,
my
your daughter. Girl. Okay, I want you to read her a book. I want you to get her a few books by Roger Hargreaves. I've kept mine that I used to read my children.
Oh.
Yeah, the Mr. Uh-huh. Men books and Little Miss books.
Oh.
Little Miss Shy. Yes. First page of Little Miss Shy says, Little Miss Shy just couldn't help it. Being shy, that is. She was terribly, desperately shy. She was so shy it hurt, which is what they call painfully shy. If at any time at all, anyone at all said anything at all to her, she blushed like a beetroot. She lived all alone in a little house quite a long way away from where you live. And so it goes on. I want you to get a little bit more wholesome in the evenings, Viv. And stop all this conspiracy stuff. Read to your daughter.
I read
Asterix and
Obelix. Asterix and Obelix, actually.
Oh, okay. Does she enjoy it?
Yeah. Yeah, because she has the pictures, you know. She likes the dog. Dogmatics. Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. It was a really good chat. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in that same city. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.